Jesus. Yell out loud!
I'm walking here! I'm walking!
Good afternoon and welcome to the Jason Rand Show on AM 770 KTTH. We are streaming on the KTTH smartphone app. We got a lot to get to. I just realized that all my notes are on my other computer and I left it open. So once I say what's trending and we get into it, you're going to run to my office and you're going to close my program and then it'll pop up on my end, right?
Sure.
Oh, it's a Friday, everyone. Let's find out what's trending, brought to you by Legacy Group Capital Northwest Fund.
What's trending? Legal.
We actually start with a little bit of an ironic story, and it's one that I remember very clearly when it happened. There was a moment in which a young person went to a nonprofit group by the name of Community Passageways. And this is one of those restorative justice programs that rather than go to jail, we put young people through this, what's known as an alternative program, to do some, they call it kind of community work, but not really. They say as part of these groups, we're going to put you together with people who are going through similar circumstances, going down the wrong road. We're going to try to course correct. We're going to put you on the right road. We're going to ensure you are, well, taken care of. Community buy-in. Making sure the family is aware of what it is you're up to so that they can keep their eyes on you. Making sure people within the community, sometimes your teacher, sometimes a person of faith, will be there to help. Someone who can guide you. Now, as I've covered many times in the past, the problem with these individual groups is actually pretty clear. They're run by police or prison abolitionists. They're run by folks on the far left, like the radical far left. And the problem is when you've got kids who are already going down the wrong path to the point where they got in front of a judge, almost thrown into jail for whatever crime it is that they're accused. If you put those people with the far left radical nonprofit groups, yeah, they don't really get the help that they need. And so I saw it today in the Seattle Times that a family of a 19-year-old who went to a community passageways meeting that was meant to be all about providing that help, getting people away from violence. Well, he ended up getting shot and killed there. He went to one of the meetings, got shot and killed. And now you've got a lawsuit going by the family of that deceased 19-year-old. They say Community Passageways was negligent in his death and it failed to provide adequate security, which you would expect a heck of a lot of security when dealing with people who go to some of these meetings. Again, these are folks who went down the wrong path. Some of them can be saved. Many of them cannot. These are bad kids who did bad things, who were trying to turn into good kids who do good things. And so, of course, when you've got a bunch of bad kids around, they could become a target of other bad kids who just haven't yet been caught. And so, according to the Times, they say Omari Wallace had been placed in community passageways as a court-ordered alternative to incarceration on pending felony robbery charges. He was attending a March 2021 orientation at Emerald City Bible Fellowship when a rival who wasn't part of the program entered and shot him several times. Now, again, I remember doing this story live on air when it broke, because at the time I had been following not just Community Passageways, but I had been really diving into the restorative justice programs out there and how much they have failed us, not just in Washington State, but around the country. Now, the person who was accused of killing him at the time, 22-year-old Isaiah Hines, he ends up getting tracked down by SWAT. Seattle SWAT team end up shooting and killing him while trying to arrest him and, you know, serving the warrant and trying to arrest him. So according to the court documents, there were about 40 people in attendance when Hines entered the Rainier Valley Church and shot Wallace. The lawsuit alleges Community Passageways, quote, failed to take reasonable measures to ensure that the participants were safe from harm. Now, they didn't just go after community passageways. The lawsuit also names the church, Urban Impact, and another group of defendants who are connected to community passageways, Urban Impact, which is another nonprofit group, or the church. Now, the Times says the action claims that after the shooting, community passageway staff and members refused to cooperate with investigators, which I reported exclusively at the time. And I'm near certain no one ever picked up on that other than me, because I was hearing it directly from members in the community and from police sources that they went down trying to get some assistance and they were not cooperating. Why might these folks not cooperate? We'll give you another hint. They're bad people. So why do you think they weren't cooperating?
Because they were bad people.
Because they're bad people. That's what we're dealing with. Again, these are folks who, for the most part, deserve to be in jail. But they got soft on crime judges, and this was at a time that we were really living the consequences of the Black Lives Matter movement. I don't recall whether or not this 19-year-old victim here was one of those kids that I thought could be helped or couldn't. I don't recall that. But at the end of the day, obviously, I want all of these kids to be saved. I want every single one of them to give up their dangerous lifestyle and get better. And it was possible that this was one of those kids who actually took the process seriously. But he got unlucky because he got put in a group that Community Passageways runs. Now, as a result of all of this, the King County prosecuting attorney at the time, Dan Satterberg, had to impanel a special inquiry to obtain documents, interviews, and other information that the police said they needed for their investigation. That is extremely rare to do, but it tells you just how little cooperation the police were getting. Now, Community Passageways is this violence prevention program. Being the site of violence that wasn't prevented? In this case, a tragic irony. A tragic irony. When you go and look into Community Passageways and all those other groups out there, you generally get the same nonsense over and over and over again. And when Community Passageways really got to the top of my radar was when I was looking into a King County prosecutor who, while talking to South Sound mayors and police chiefs who were complaining specifically about youth crime, like, why aren't you putting these kids in jail where they belong? They are violent. We're not talking about stealing a Butterfinger from the 7-Eleven. We're talking about shooting the clerk at the 7-Eleven and then stealing the Butterfinger. Why would we go easy on these people? And a prosecutor who was running this whole sort of juvenile, he was taking the lead in the juvenile case. His name was Ben Carr. He's the senior deputy prosecuting attorney for King County. I'm assuming he's still there. He did a presentation in front of these South Sound mayors, and he told them to get used to the fact that they're not going to put juveniles in jail, no matter, in some cases, how violent they are. He even joked about their concern with that meme of the dog in the cafe that's on fire. You know that meme? He uses that in a PowerPoint in front of a bunch of people who are saying, we are less safe because of what it is you're doing or not doing in the King County Prosecuting Attorney's Office. And some of the crimes that we're talking about here, that they're just saying, we'll put you in rehab, quote unquote. We'll put you in a community passageways type of program. We're talking about crimes that involve actual guns, firearms, that we're told the left really, 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 really loathes. That's what we're told over and over and over again. Now, this was called, at least at the time, and I think it's generally, they might have had a slightly different name, but the name of the program that they were using, instead of putting people in jail, was called Restorative Community Pathways, RCP. And again, restorative justice, restorative justice, restorative justice. That's what they love. Community Passageways was one of the groups that was a part of this big plan that would be, quote unquote, partners in all of this. It was them, creative justice, collective justice, and Choose 180. They love to say justice and everything because they're social justice groups. And he assured everyone, don't worry. We're going to take this seriously. We're going to do what we can to ensure that the nonprofits, as part of this partnership, will keep your community safe. And so at the time, they had a website up. Those nonprofit groups I just mentioned as part of the Restorative Community Passageways, you know, master group. And it was quickly taken down after I started to quote it. Like, I remember this so clearly because they never really hide what it is their intent is, because activists don't hide their intent. They're pretty open about it on the radical left. And they said that it's, quote, end goal is abolition. Abolition was in all caps. That they are, quote, fighting to dismantle the carceral state. Right. Now, is that the kind of group, is that the kind of worldview that you want some of these troubled kids in? No, of course not. Why would we want police and prison abolitionists to take control of these kids and try to help them? They're not going to be able to help them. And so when you put these already bad kids, these troubled kids, in with groups that don't really care about them, only really care about closing prisons and keeping people out of jail, could we not have foreseen that something like this would happen? Could happen? Would happen? None of us? Those of us who follow this stuff closely, we warn about this all the time. Not necessarily one individual going into one of these groups and start shooting people, but the fact of the matter is, we are creating targets. And in this case, it doesn't seem like they even bothered with meaningful security, if any security at all. So we'll see now where this ends up going. It's going to likely take a long time. I'm very curious as to whether or not the King County Prosecuting Attorney's Office is still doing any work with Community Passageways or any of the other nonprofits that I previously have called out. Now, does this mean Community Passageways is guilty of any? I don't know. I have no clue. But I could have foreseen something like this happening in a general sense. And now we have a 19-year-old who's dead, a 19-year-old who maybe could have gotten on the right path. I seem to recall the parent, one of the parents, at least the mother, who seemed to think that, I think I can save my boy, only to then lose the boy to another bit of needless violence perpetuated by someone who shouldn't have had a gun at the time, despite all of our tough on gun rights laws that we have in Washington State. Weird how all of that never seems to work out. It's weird how, as much as Democrats fight to take away guns from the general public, the only ones who end up losing those rights, who end up abiding by the law, are the law-abiding citizens. They take away our guns, but never the guns of the criminals. Don't understand how that works. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Let's get political.
Marjorie Taylor Greene causes a lot of problems. Needlessly causes problems. And today, she filed a motion to vacate the House speakership. This was a move because of a spending package that was passed. It's very, 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 very expensive. And it was done in order to keep the government running. It was bipartisan at the end of it. But there is a small group of very loud, very vocal conservatives who are taking a very hard line on government spending. A position, by the way, I totally understand. However, we are right in the middle of a campaign. We'd like to actually win back the White House. We'd actually like to not just hold on to the House, but maybe even gain some seats. It's going to be unlikely just based on the map. Where we'll actually gain power is the Senate, and that unless we screw things up, the Senate will become conservative after this next election. Again, mostly based on just the map. It just happens to favor this time. The elections happen to favor Republicans. But nothing is a given. Donald Trump winning the presidency is not a given. And yet we've got Marjorie Taylor Greene out there trying to yet again create drama with our House Speaker, Mike Johnson. She spoke after she filed her resolution.
I filed the motion to vacate today, but it's more of a warning and a pink slip. I respect our conference. I paid all my dues to my conference. I'm a member in good standing, and I do not wish to inflict pain on our conference and to throw the house in chaos. But this is basically a warning, and it's time for us to go through the process, take our time, and find a new Speaker of the House that will stand with Republicans and our Republican majority instead of standing with the Democrats.
Well, the Republicans voted in favor of this as well. And I imagine, even if I might otherwise agree with her opposition to the spending bill, we're going into an election in which we don't want to come off as if we're chaotic and can't get anything done. Right? Because Democrats are throwing the whole chaos line directly at Donald Trump. They said that his 4 years in office, total chaos. Now, they helped create chaos. He was a little chaotic. We don't have to lie. But they helped create a lot of that chaos. And it got a lot of people tired. Tired enough to decide, yeah, I'll go ahead and vote for Joe Biden. Why would we create that drama right this moment? Talk about not seeing the forest for the trees. Because it's not like if they cut several billion dollars from the spending package, that would make a heck of a lot of a difference right now. Because in the short term, none of this actually matters. Long term, it does matter. And I would rather sacrifice in the short term to ensure that we win the long game, in which we will get more than what we've asked for. But we have to be in positions of power, and this threatens that. Now, she did not file her resolution as privileged, which means it can't actually be considered until after this upcoming recess. Now, they're taking a recess for Easter. It's 2 weeks. So this isn't going to happen anytime soon. But if it is prolonged and she ends up pushing this seriously and brings it up over and over and over again, the media is going to hyper-focus on this, liberal media at least, again, to claim, oh, look at the circus in the House. Not only do they focus on that, but it gets closer and closer and closer to the election. And, you know, what we definitely don't want to have happen is this happening right around the RNC convention. We don't want to take away any of the attention from the issues that people actually care about. And as much as Marjorie Taylor Greene believes this is one of them, it's not. If it's not about person, just their economy in their own households, I know the argument is, well, the more we go into debt, I get that, but that's not how people generally view their own financial situation. They don't tie it to the national debt. That's not how they view things. They look at inflation, which is on our side. It is so high right now. We actually have a plan, the conservatives do. If it's not about immigration, if it's not about crime and drug use, then we start to lose the traction that we have going into this election. And we cannot allow Marjorie Taylor Greene or anyone derail us. Now, Matt Gaetz, who caused the drama the last time around, was actually successful in booting Kevin McCarthy. He's already come out and said, I respect her, but I'm not signed on. I'm not totally convinced that this is the right thing for us to do. Now, he could, of course, change his mind. But the fact of the matter is, with him out, not that they need that much support, but with him out, it does make it a little bit more difficult for Marjorie Taylor Greene to claim that she's got enough support to even move this forward and insist that there's a vote. I just hope we don't have to go through that nightmare again. Because that cost a lot of support, I think, at least in the short term. And right now we're in that sort of time period where short term means it's going to hurt the election. So let's not create any more chaos right now. Just focus on the actual issues people care about, win the election, and then figure it all out. It's much easier to figure all of this out when you have more votes in your favor. And with today, another announcement of a retirement from a member of the House, a Republican member of the House. Yeah, those votes that we have in our favor, yeah, smaller, smaller, and smaller. Let's quickly find out what else is trending.
What's trending? The sports ball.
So it's March Madness happening right now. I think I overheard some people in the office having a bracket, and everyone lost at this point because of Kentucky.
Kentucky lost to Oakland.
Yeah, and those Oakland something or other, they're not a very good team, and yet somehow they were able to win.
It was, I believe, a 13 seed over a 3.
Yeah, so everyone kind of shocked by that. Others were shocked at a game between Kansas and Samford. And everyone is now calling it robbery due to a what can only be described as a truly awful call by the ref. I'll let you set it up.
Well, pretty much Samford was trying to upset Kansas, big basketball school in the country, and Kansas was on a fast break going up for the dunk. Samford guy comes from behind to block the ball, and he hit all ball, and the refs call a foul, which then gives Kansas the free throws, which lets them seal the game.
And at that point, the score was 90-89, and they had 20 seconds left. And so this was obviously a pivotal moment.
In terms of basketball, you can't mess up this kind of call.
Yeah, here's a little bit of the play-by-play from TBS.
Kansas gets the ball in. Ahead to Timberlake on the run.
It's a block.
And he missed the shot.
Did they call a foul?
They called a foul.
He went for the jam. Should have gone for the layup.
Okay, you don't have to rub it in.
Hit the deck hard.
I got to see the replay. Was that clean? I got to see the replay.
It was clean.
That was clean.
It was very clean. I mean, he wasn't even that close physically.
No, he did it perfectly. He did not take his body weight going into the shooter. He hit the ball from behind and leaned out and made zero contact with the opposing player.
As a result of that horrible call, they ended up changing the direction of this game, and the upset did not happen. And what was curious there was also, to me at least, it feels like one of those moments in which a ref saw the response of the player who pretended to be fouled.
And when you go down hard, it looks like you're fouled.
I don't think he was faking it. I think he was caught
off
guard.
His own momentum, when his arms hit the backboard, turn his body to make him look like he's falling awkwardly.
But because it was so rough, I think it just triggered this almost like a muscle memory. When you see something like that, you blow the whistle and you call a foul. But there were other, can they not overrule?
You can review fouls. I don't know if there's challenges or if the refs just didn't decide to review it. Or the refs had money on Kansas.
If only, actually, God knows. He's joking, don't sue him. But if you do want to sue him, his name is Brady. 1-800-465-8770 for your text messages. 1-800-465-8770. You're listening to The Jason Rant Show.
If Israel did win, would the American media even know what they're looking at? We'll look at the evidence from the Magic 8-Ball of Evidence, Brian Suit Show, on Monday morning.
Welcome back to The Jason Rant Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. I really do appreciate it. We've got a show staffing announcement. Monday, we actually have a new producer. I mean, I don't think he's been scared off yet.
I haven't heard that he has.
Yeah, that's good. He starts on Monday. And I think what I'm going to end up doing next week, either on the Monday podcast, the Leftovers podcast, which you can only get by subscribing to the Jason Rant Show podcast feed, I think what I'm going to do is pull in some of my older producers and have them do a totally... almost like a roast, just a brutal podcast about what it's like working for me or with me and the things that they shouldn't do, the things that they should do. And most of the producers who have worked with me are still here in the building. Well, yeah, they're still here in the building. One left radio completely, although that was not my fault. In fact, I still talk to producer Tom. One left to become a teacher, you know, and he and I still talk. Peyton, I talk to him almost every day. So I think they'll be blunt, but also they'll be honest and say the things that you'll learn as a person. I mean, Brady came in never having even listened to the radio, and look at him now.
It's true. I mean, I'd listened to radio. I'd never listened to your show before.
Gee, thanks. Thanks, man.
Oh, no problem.
So on Monday, we'll have a new producer, and that means, because I've not really been able to, for fill-in producers, I've not really been able to be too mean to them on air and make their lives miserable, but I can do that when someone officially works only for me.
Has he signed the contract?
He's already all in.
Oh, he's in for it.
All in.
Oh.
Yeah, so,
I can only give him a 50% preview of the glares he's going to get.
Poor guy. Oh, God. But we'll talk more about that on Monday. So the polls are not looking good for Joe Biden. I've spent some time today looking at them, and I'm looking at them state by state. That's the only poll that matters. It's a state poll, right? You get the national polls, and with national polls, you either get likely voters or registered voters. The registered voters one doesn't ever matter. I just ignore those when they pop up. You want likely voters, and you want to look state by state. Because as you know, you could win the popular vote, but lose the election. That's how the Electoral College works. You want to go state by state, because that's how you can win. And it informs the states that all of us really need to be paying attention to as we get into November. Now, Trump in Michigan, according to a brand new CNN poll, he is up by 8 points. Michigan is the reason why all of a sudden Chuck Schumer is going after Benjamin Netanyahu and Biden is starting to change his tone just a little bit on Israel versus Hamas. Michigan, as we've said, has a very large Arab American population, lots of Muslim voters there, lots of Palestinian voters there. It's a small percentage, but enough to cause some problems for Joe Biden. 100,000 of them, over 100,000 during the primary, picked someone else. Now, do I think the 100,000 plus will do that again in the general? No, but how many will? Because I imagine that you're going to see some states, like last time, that will come down to a handful of votes. And a handful in this context, like 30, 40,000 votes. And that's doable if you're part of the anti-left or the anti-Jewish left-wing movement. That's enough of you. And they're very passionate about their hatred of Israel. And I would not be surprised if a good chunk of that 100,000 decided, yeah, I'm not going to vote for Joe Biden. Now, when you look at the real clear average for Trump, he's up 4 points. Now, that's taking into account some polls from a few months ago. So right now, Donald Trump is looking very, very, very good in Michigan. When you go into some other polls from The Hill and Emerson, they just had one out and they looked at Wisconsin. You've got Donald Trump up by 4 points. When you go into Georgia, there was a poll, two polls actually, from one from Marist, one from CBS. They have Trump in Georgia up 4% and 3%. He hasn't been down at all this year in Georgia. I think his real clear average is like 5.3, something like that now. Things are looking really good for him in Georgia. You can maybe thank Fani Willis a little bit for reminding everyone that he's a victim in all of this, all the legal problems. You go into Arizona, another state that you used to be able to say, yeah, that's going to go red. Not so much lately, but he's up 5.4 points in the real clear average. That's looking really good for him. The new poll from The Hill has him up by 4. Now, the only battleground state that Donald Trump is neck and neck in is Pennsylvania. His real clear average is 0.5, so that's a wash. Now, I generally think that when he's within 2 points, he's probably up over Biden more than we realize, because people don't still like when talking to pollsters to admit that they're voting for Trump. But when you look at the CNN poll that I just mentioned, they have him up by 2 points when you factor in third-party candidates. And you're going to start to see more and more and more very specific attacks against mostly RFK Jr. They'll go after Cornell West a little bit, but there are racial implications to that. So they're probably just going to focus on RFK Jr., which is why all of a sudden on MSNBC and CNN, they've been doing a lot of bashing of him. And don't get me wrong, I think he's a kook. But for the purposes of this election, I think he's brilliant. I think everyone in Washington State who's a Democrat should seriously consider voting for him, because he actually can win the election, and you should, and he represents your values. So you should all do that. But there's one particular poll that they're paying attention to that they found a little bit problematic. And it was specifically looking at the CNN poll and how Latinos are very, very quickly moving over to Donald Trump. And they look at him on the issue of immigration, which is the biggest issue. They say they trust him, Donald Trump, by 20 points more than they do Joe Biden on immigration. And remember, the whole idea behind having porous borders to folks on the left is they think that that would help them with Latino voters, which is bizarre because we're talking about voters who went through the right process to come here legally or who actually fled real dangers, not just simply wanting a better life, which is something I understand, but that's not a reason why one might come here illegally. So things are not looking great for Joe Biden. And I don't know what can turn things around for him outside of Trump's biggest vulnerability, Donald Trump. He is his own vulnerability. The fact is, the best thing that ever happened to him, politically speaking, is getting booted from Twitter. The best thing that has ever happened to him. Because as much as I liked a lot of the tweets, I would certainly admit that they were not very presidential. And while he's still acting that way on Truth Social, no one is on Truth Social on the left. And even the folks over at MSNBC and CNN who would gladly go after Donald Trump's statements, they won't even log on to Truth Social. That's how much they loathe the man. So for the most part, people aren't getting access to some of the unpresidential messages that he's putting out there, with the exception of people who love them because they love him. And as much as MSNBC thinks that they're sending the message by not airing Donald Trump's speeches, yeah, you're just helping him. You're just helping him because the people who have become the most leery of Donald Trump are the ones who see some of the speeches and say he goes overboard, that he's too off the cuff, and when he's doing that, he's mean. When he does that, he comes off as unpresidential. They don't trust that. So all you're doing is keeping that video away from people who maybe would view it and say, oh, okay, never mind, I was on the fence, but I just can't pull the trigger. I can't do it. I can't go into that booth and vote for Donald Trump. They're just helping him. But that's not going to be there forever. And at some point, they're going to realize that it's actually hurting their cause. And they're going to go out of their way to take him out of context like they did with the bloodbath comment over the weekend. Like, you think that was the only time they're going to do that? You think that was it for the whole session? It was so bad that up until November, they're not going to pull something like that again? Oh, no, 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 no. Yes, they will. They'll be doing it whenever it is they can. And so he has to be careful, because I know Donald Trump loves to troll the media. I totally get it. Believe me, I totally get it. But he's making it a little bit too easy, or he could make it too easy for them to go after him. And it could end up hurting him. Because when you have an election that's going to come down to a handful of states and be decided within 1 or 2 percentage points, potentially, you can't afford to alienate anyone. Seriously, you cannot afford to alienate anyone. So at some point, he's going to come to those terms. I just hope he does it now, sooner rather than later, because things are going so well for him right now. And as I've said before, when he sticks to the script, when he's reading from a teleprompter, a speech that's in his voice, but forces him to be centered, right? Focused. He comes off as incredibly presidential. He really does. And I say that with that tone because I was shocked when I first heard him do a speech like that, mostly because, you know, up until his running for president, my experience with Donald Trump is just the entertainer, the personality of Donald Trump, the host of The Apprentice. Like, that's all that I really knew him as, the guy who was in Home Alone 2. And beyond that, didn't really get anything. So when I hear him sound presidential, like, yeah, because I like his policies. I love his policies. That's why he's doing so well right now. People are comparing their life under Joe Biden to their lives under Donald Trump. And for the vast majority of us, especially when we're talking about finances or national security, immigration, whatever that big issue is, with the exception of abortion, most people would say they were better off then than they are now. Some people might even say at the beginning of COVID, they're better off then than they are now. 1-800-465-8770 for your text messages. 1-800-465-8770. An interesting twist in the lawsuit against Apple by the DOJ. Plus, Douglas Murray, he is a talking head over at Fox News. He absolutely destroyed a journalist from South Africa. It made me feel bad for her for about 13 seconds, and then I just laughed. We'll get to that and more later on the Jason Rant Show. To the Jason Rant Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. I really do appreciate it. Douglas Murray is a talking head you sometimes see on Fox News, but the truth is that's not what he's really known for. He is a very, very, very smart author, researcher, public figure, I guess. He gives a lot of speeches. And he often, as a journalist, goes to the actual scenes of the stories he covers. Lately, he's gone to, you know, Israel to cover some of what's going on the ground. He's been in Ukraine recently. Just a very brilliant guy. And from a political perspective, ideologically, he's conservative. He doesn't outwardly take on a sort of a conservative position for the sake of being the conservative voice. And like, he just talks about the issues and they just happen to align with conservative values. And some of his books, if you're going to buy two books this year, one should obviously be mine, but pick any one of his other books, The Strange Death of Europe, The Madness of Crowds, The War on the West, all of them are so good. And you can hear in this next clip why he's just so good. He is unrelenting. When someone says something that is just factually inaccurate, or when they argue in bad faith, he will pounce. And he is always the smartest person in the room. And so he was on a show called Eyewitness News with Jane Dutton out of South Africa, where he happens to be right now. He said at the beginning of this interview, he's there to get a better sense of the issues happening in South Africa. There's a lot of problems, some unrest, some general breakdown of infrastructure, courtesy of an incompetent government. But they got into, courtesy of Jane Dutton bringing it up, the war against Hamas. Now, of course, South Africa recently on the international stage put Israel on trial for committing genocide. It was always a giant scam driven by animus. And she thought she would really get Douglas Murray on this issue because she thinks she's so much smarter than he is on this issue and probably everything else. Turns out to definitely not be the case.
If you start a war, there are repercussions. There are repercussions to Russia for starting a war against Ukraine. Russia's lost a lot of troops. There are repercussions for Hamas for starting a war against Israel.
The repercussions for an illegal occupation.
Uh-oh. What's the illegal occupation?
Of Israel against the Palestinians.
Where?
That is an illegal occupation.
Where?
It is a determined illegal occupation.
Gaza?
Of course, Gaza and the West Bank.
Have you been to Gaza?
Yes, I have.
Is it occupied by the Israelis?
By the way, I love that because they're talking about occupied, occupation. When they say that out during protests, for example, when they say from the river to the sea, they mean Israel is being occupied. Like the land, Israel is the occupied land, and it's actually Palestinian land. She says Gaza, right? So she's basically claiming that she doesn't mean all of Israeli land is actually, quote unquote, Palestine. She's talking specifically about Gaza, which gives him the opening to say, okay, well, who's occupying Gaza? There's no Jews there.
It's completely sealed off, as you know. That's
by
why
who?
They call it by the Israelis.
And who?
By the Israelis, by the U.S. and whoever.
Someone who claims to have been there, visited, and is a very learned woman, maybe doesn't understand geography and doesn't understand the actual area that she's talking about.
And who else?
The Israelis. Isn't that enough?
No, tell me who else is allegedly sealing the Gaza.
I'm saying that Israel is
what?
Has completely encircled Gaza. Nothing goes in, nothing goes
Gaza
out,
has.
As you know.
Well, as you know, if you've been, Gaza also has a border with Egypt. Why do you not mention Egypt? Egypt has a stronger fence to fence in the people of Gaza.
Okay,
than
so
Israel
you
does.
Agree that Gaza has been fenced off.
So that's her takeaway from that, right? So his point is you've got two bordering countries that have fences up for protection, by the way. Why is it that you only focus on Israel? Why don't you ever? And that's a question for all the people who are out on the streets every weekend. Why do they never bring up Egypt? Because they tell us that they're not anti-Semites, that anti-Zionism is not anti-Semitism. And yet, weirdly, they only focus on the Jews. Why do you think that is?
No, it's fenced off, although you might note that there are more workers until the 7th allowed into Israel to work and indeed to have medical treatments and others that were considered necessary, which Hamas doesn't provide. There was plenty more people every day coming in to work in Israel from Gaza until the 7th than were going the other way into Egypt. So if I go back to this question. Why do you say there's an illegal occupation of Gaza? Why did you say that?
Because there is.
Why? Well, who
Israel
is occupying
is an occupying
it?
State.
No.
Internationally recognized.
No. It's not at all.
I want to move
that's
on.
That's your view. Hang on. That's your view.
And
okay.
I have
okay.
to correct
our
your
view.
Our
views
I
differ.
Have to correct. No, it doesn't. The facts, our views might differ, but the facts are the facts. And I want to pick you up on something you just did.
I'm you interviewing said, you.
I know, but yes. I think you're uninformed.
No.
So
no,
let me just...
Hardly.
So let me. You are uninformed.
Oh,
because
really?
First of all,
yes.
You didn't say that Egypt is blockading Gaza. Secondly, you claim that Israel...
I'm talking about
let
Israel
me
here, and I want
oh,
to
well,
move...
It's
I
very
want to
convenient for
this.
You to mention Israel, because you've clearly got an animus here.
And that's really what this is about. And in that 2 minute and 27 second clip of a much longer interview, which I very much recommend, it is very entertaining. In just 2 minutes and 27 seconds, he made the perfect point, which is they don't really even care about Gaza. It's their animus towards Israel and Jews. Because if you truly cared about the folks in Gaza, if you really wanted to call out, you know, the quote unquote occupiers, and at least the sense that they mean that and how they use that term, they would also call out Egypt. And yet I'm willing to bet that you cannot find a single sign that is ever held up at any of these rallies, not a single sign that even mentions Egypt. Because all their positions truly are about is the destruction of the only Jewish state. That's all that they care about. That's how any kind of bigotry works. You have this irrational hyper-focus, because of that hatred, on a very specific group of people, right? That's how this works. Why is it that they're not at least as angry with Egypt? who could very easily just open up their border. They don't even have to have a border at all, do they? They don't have to have any fences. Why do they have a fence there? For the same reason that Israel does, which is the people inside Gaza, because of Hamas, specifically the Hamas freedom fighters, they pose a very clear and direct threat. And they have always posed that threat. So if you want to check out that Douglas Murray interview, just you can just get it on YouTube or social media. Just type in Douglas Murray plus South Africa plus humiliation. It was great. It's the Jason Rand Show.
If Israel did win, would the American media even know what they're looking at? We'll look at the evidence from the Magic 8 Ball of Evidence, Brian Suit Show, on Monday morning.